Well, it's first Sunday, the first Sunday of August, the dog days, and believe me, when we talk about politicians in Washington, although most of them out of town on recess, we're talking about a bunch of dog days here with politicians. I didn't call politicians dogs, but simply saying that something connects with the political arena and the dog days of August in Washington. We'd all agree. Thank you very much. Anyway, moving right along, we have our first Sunday political roundtable debate. And we have with us our politicians. And we welcome this morning Nick Benton of the Democratic Party. Nick, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Sitting in for Patrice, and we certainly appreciate your coming. Because
I recognize everybody else here has been doing this for a couple of years.
Right.
My first time, so
you
all.
So you can get carried away, Nick. Okay. We don't. You got all the privileges in the world. The rest of them will tell shut up.
Right.
So that my friend will call me and tell me to shut up. The guy, remember the last time? Anyway, it's time for politics, and let's get started. Emily Leffler, Independent, is with us. Emily Leffler, Bolton is going to the United Nations. Is he going to improve the United Nations? Strange appointment by the president.
Well, I have to say I'm a little bit doubtful of the administration's claims that he's a reformer. I think, you know, we have yet to find out what was in those classified documents that the State Department refused to release that the Democrats were requesting. We have yet to see, you know, what kind of effective change he can actually introduce. The fact is he's someone who was trying to perpetuate false intelligence and rearrange intelligence findings to fit an agenda. And, you know, they took a sneaky backdoor approach to getting him in there without the support of the elected representatives. So it's a disappointing choice.
Jim Pomeroy, Republican. Jim, 45 Marines killed in 24 hours last week. Questions, the polls are coming out this week showing that more Americans now are not in concert with President Bush's efforts in Iraq.
Well, I think it's important to win the war on terror, and you're going to have setbacks along the way, but we're fighting for the right cause, and we have to continue to do so.
Nicholas Sawalk, what about the Jack Johnson of Prince George's County? You live in Prince George's County. No,
yeah,
you don't.
I don't.
Close. Close. What about Prince George's County? Jack Johnson, the county executive, I mean, they're out there fighting with each other. The police are fighting the police, And more cars are getting stolen, people are getting killed, and every time you pick up the paper, it's Prince George's County.
The chief is trying to do some reforms, kind of like the successful reforms he did in Norfolk, and I think he's getting some resistance from the police union, and he's getting some resistance as far as not being able to put enough officers on the streets to get his plans in place, and I think he's feeling like some of the officers, not all of them, are just not stepping up to the table.
But is Jack Johnson going to survive the county executive? A lot of politics in Maryland right now.
I think Jack Johnson will survive.
You think he'll survive? Nick Benton, this is a goodie coming up right off the top of the head, hot off the press. The name is Glenn Ivey, state's attorney in Prince George's County, a likely candidate possibly for O'Malley or Doug Duncan running against Ehrlich. Ehrlich has Michael Steele, an African-American. Now, Glenn Ivey, an African-American, looks very, very good on that ticket to beat Ehrlich in Maryland.
Okay. Well, I drove across from Virginia this morning of American Legion Bridge. I saw that Ehrlich is the governor of Maryland. I run a weekly newspaper in Falls Church, Virginia, and we're pretty focused on Virginia. And I really couldn't tell you a lot that would make political sense about Maryland politics right now, other than that I know that there are these two candidates who are vying and to go against Ehrlich. So.
Okay. Well, let's get started. Let's go back to first the Bolton nomination, or now the appointment of Bolton outside of the Senate. There are a lot of people saying this really doesn't fly very much beyond the Beltway in Peoria. Who cares? As far as they're concerned, President Bush made an appointment, and they're backing all the way. What about that, Jim Pomeroy?
Well, I think so. I mean, the president, yeah, I think people generally believe the president gets to pick these nominees. And, you know, the Senate, I think a majority of the Senate would have voted to confirm him, but you had your, you know, filibustering, and so he availed himself of the option open to him, a recess appointment, and he got his guy.
I mean, this just moves the debate to January 2007, at which point a lot of the speculation about John Bolton will be either confirmed or denied. We'll see how he has worked as an ambassador for 6 or so months, and we'll be able to determine at that point whether or not to keep him as U.N. ambassador or have the president find somebody new.
But one of the areas, go right ahead.
Well, I would say that the president making this recess appointment of Bolton is a real sign of weakness on his part, and it will be perceived that way at the U.N. When all the poll figures are showing that support in the United States for his efforts in Iraq are way down, and his general overall ratings are just barely over 40% right now. To see him have to revert to this kind of a approach to get his man in the U.N., they're going to treat him very politely, and we will see what he does when he's in there. But he's coming in a position of weakness. And
when you say position of weakness, what do you mean?
I say that a lot of countries representing the United Nations are looking at what the Bush administration is doing right now as not being supported by the majority of his own population. And this is a further example of that when he has to revert to a recess appointment, can't get the advice and consent of his own Senate to confirm this guy, that they're going to look at him from that point of view. And it's not a sign of strength that the president did what he did. It's a sign of
strength. In the United Nations right now, a very critical situation world throughout because of tensions not only in the Middle East, but also now we find the country of Niger in Africa, which has been neglected for years and years and years. Billions of dollars have gone into Iraq. Millions of dollars have gone into the tsunami area and around the world. But this one little tiny country, people have been starving to death. And it's been on the minds, as Tony Blair of England, the Prime Minister of England, says, well, yes, we've just ignored it all this time. It's too bad, but now we're going to do something about it. And out of the United Nations, this great thrust to help not only Niger, but other African countries. Will John Bolton be able to make a difference?
Well, you know, we need somebody in there who, to use the famous phrase, is going to be a uniter, not a divider. We need somebody who's not going to perpetuate some kind of bureaucratic infighting. There's been a lot of criticism coming out of Niger that the UN was slow to react, that the international support organizations were slow to react. And, you know, now that they're on the ball, they need people who are going to be, you know, looking forward and able to jump in. And, you know, we have a lot of talk coming out of this administration about, you know, freedom being on the march and spreading democracy throughout the world. And the fact is that the administration used a relic of a time when the Congress would be in recess for, you know, months and months in their home districts to appoint someone who was not democratically supported. Democratically with a little d, not a big D, but who is not supported by the people that represent the people of the United States. And I think that's unfortunate that we have that kind of hypocrisy.
We'd like to get your input. Our telephone number 301-230-0980, #980 on the Verizon wireless system as we talk politics this morning. Emily Loeffler, independent. James Pomeroy, Republican. Nicholas Sawalk,
Libertarian.
I know I was going to say that. And also Nick Benton, Democrat. We certainly appreciate everybody's participation this morning. And what's yours at 301-230-0980, #980 in the Verizon wireless system. Nick.
The John Bolton thing, really, it comes down to this. The criticisms that Bolton made are criticisms that are made by quite a few people, a majority of the people in America, have some real questions about the efficacy of the UN. Can they get stuff done? And the situation in Niger just kind of...
What kind of stuff?
Can they make things happen, or do they do a lot of talking? The oil for food scandal, for example, the corruption that's inherent in this sort of organization, the fact that a very small country in Africa has the same voice in the General Assembly as the United States. John Bolton is... made some very uncomfortable statements pointing out that there's something wrong with an organization that works that way. There's something ineffective about it. Now, the real question is, can John Bolton work within the organization to make the changes that are necessary, or is his criticism something that's going to stop him and make him ineffective in changing an ineffective organization?
I think that one of the things that concerns me about him going up there now is that the United Nations is going to be called on to take some significant steps. We see that Iran, for example, has, at least for the time being, not been willing to accept the European proposal for how to deal with its nuclear program,
mm-hmm.
and that it's even being reported now that that this might have to come before the United Nations. Now, what kind of a position is John Bolton going to take when that happens? Is he going to browbeat the UN into trying to support some kind of a military or sanctioned operation against Iran? I think this is one of the tests that will come up very soon.
I'm sure we'll get questions on John Bolton, and some callers will call in. I want to move to another topic that's very, very important, and that is last week's devastating figures coming out of the Middle East of 45 Marines killed in a matter of 24 hours. The question is, the president answered by saying, yes, we have a grip on the situation, and not only Iraq, but on the war on terrorism. Here again, President Bush has associated or has connected the war on terrorism with Iraq and 9/11. Is that fair?
Jerry, I don't know if you got the memo. There's no longer a war on terrorism. It's now called something else. It's like the war against extreme radicals, or it's a PR thing, you know.
I think it's a global struggle against extremism now or something.
Oh, okay.
Well, I tend to take this seriously and think that, I mean, you can make jokes about what people call it, but, this is a global war on terror, and that you can have different names for it, but we are fighting terrorists around the world.
But, Jim, how can it be global? I'm not taking sides here. I just want to ask the question. How can it be global if you only have two countries that are really putting the effort forth, Britain and the United States?
Well, it's a global war because there are terrorists all
Japan,
over.
I don't hear anything from Japan. I don't hear from China.
Well, many countries have.
Or for Latin America?
Many countries have been supporting us, but the bottom line is this: is we are fighting terror, and we are fighting terrorists, and terrorists are around the world.
I would say that, to me, the invasion of Iraq had nothing to do with any war on terrorism. However, we're now confronted by insurgents in Iraq on all sides. And Iraq, since the invasion, has become a breeding ground for radical insurgents that was not a breeding ground before.
Eric,
we need an exit strategy, period. End of story. The United States people want an exit strategy. The administration outside of Donald Rumsfeld, who won't talk about that sort of thing, but you start to hear rumblings from the administration about talking about how long it will take us to pull out. The American people want their sons and daughters to come home and stop getting blown up in Iraq. That's it. And we can talk about renaming the global war, and we can talk about shifting fronts and doing important work. But at the end of the day, if you really want to support our troops, bring them home.
Okay, in this morning's news, we read a copy here from Associated Press. The mother of a soldier killed in Iraq, and she's part of her protest. Says that she won't give up her protest in Crawford, Texas, until she meets with President Bush. She's outside of his ranch where he is vacationing, and the mother is demanding an accounting from Bush of how he's conducting the war in Iraq. Now, this woman lost her son in Iraq.
I there's been a report that's classified, big parts of it are classified, that came to Congress this past week. That was called something like Strategy for Success in Iraq. It was mandated by Congress that the Pentagon provide this report and provide it on a periodic basis. I can tell you that report suggests that if we're looking for a strategy for success, that is how to get out of Iraq and not have it completely fall apart, we are nowhere, anywhere close to being able to do that. The Iraqis are just totally unprepared economically, militarily, and from a security standpoint to take care of the situation there where the United States will leave. And so there's great political pressure on the Bush administration now. The numbers are down in the low 30s in terms of how he's handling the situation in Iraq as far as a percentage of the population that's supporting this policy. He's going to have to do something, but he's going to leave in his wake a terrible mess.
If you're joining us, though, if you're with us and want to get in on the action, please do. Our telephone number, 301-230-0980, HAL 980, the Verizon Wireless System, absolutely free. Call here on Metro Talk's first Sunday political debate. Emily Leffler, independent, a Republican, James Pomeroy, Nicholas Sawalk, libertarian, and Democrat Nick Benton are all with us, and we'd like to hear from you. Get online now at 301-230-0980, pound 980 on Verizon. Emily?
Well, and I think the unfortunate thing here is while you have, you know, new rashes of violence breaking out every day and you know, these distraught parents who are asking for some kind of accountability, and these are the kinds of games that the administration is playing. Exactly the joke that Jim was thinking that I was making was referring to, you know, this, you know, PR. They're playing PR games. We had the vice president on television just a month or two ago saying we're in the last throes of violence. And this is how out of touch they are with what the American people are looking for in leadership.
Let's talk with the gentleman in Alexandria. I'm sorry.
What we're talking about when we say a global war on terrorism is simply another political PR campaign to convince people that we have to send American boys and girls to get killed. And quite frankly, I don't believe that we're going to have anything come out of the UN at all with Mr. Bolton, because take a look at who's sitting on the Security Council. One guy reports to a guy named Gaddafi. Anybody remember him and the planes over Lockerbie?
Mm-hmm.
We have nothing going on in the UN. Hell, they don't even pay their parking tickets, for God's sakes. At least the New York cops tow them, thank God. But the situation is this. The UN is a non-working, non-viable organization that no longer continues to its charter, that no longer can function as a working unit for the benefit of other countries. And what we have sitting here is a president who is willing to prove that he's a leader on the blood of more than 1,800 Americans. And frankly, Mr. Parmalee, I suggest if you really want to fight the global war on terrorism, you go down to a recruiting office and you get your ass over there. And somebody needs to start investigating how much money Halliburton and the contractors are getting for setting up over there. This is a joke. It is a bad joke. It is my son's generation Vietnam. And I will tell you right now, I never thought I'd say this because at one point I had respect for the gentleman, but all Rumsfeld is another McNamara. And when that man croaks, I'm throwing a champagne party. So y'all have a good day. Jerry, always lovely talking to you, dear.
Thank you, Pat.
Have a good one, love.
Good luck.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Let's talk to Neil in Columbia. Good morning, Neil.
Good morning. I didn't catch your name, but my comrade Pat, or comrade Pat needs to lighten up a bit. She needs to understand that President Bush is doing what needs to be done to fight terrorism.
What's that, sir?
Pardon me?
What is that?
He's fighting. We're fighting a war to liberate people who are terrorized by Saddam Hussein.
And who are those? Who are those persons?
Mean the women and children of our country?
No. Who are the persons that we're liberating?
The
Iraqis.
The Iraqis. Yes. Thank you.
What about the rest of the world?
What about?
I mean, there's terrorism all over the world.
Well, Jerry, let me jump in here. Saddam Hussein was a supporter of terrorism, and we went in and took him out.
It's my understanding, based on the press conferences and all that President Bush has given, he's saying that he's fighting terrorism throughout the world.
Yes.
Not just Iraq.
Well, there are different ways to fight.
Aren't we still in Afghanistan?
Yes.
Well, we're not supposed to be
fighting terrorism in the world.
Well, that's, I don't know.
And by fighting terrorism in the world, and fighting it in Iraq and Afghanistan, we are trying to get information based on other cells of terrorism to find other cells of terrorism to conquer them as well.
And we're now fighting terrorism in London, by the way.
Pardon me?
We're now fighting terrorism in London as well, by the way. So you're right, it is spreading. We are
You know what? And we also fought at September 11th in New York and in Arlington.
But
and I repeat, again, every month I ask you, Jim, where's Osama bin Laden? Where are the folks that actually committed that deed, that perpetuated and planned that deed? It wasn't Saddam Hussein. We all know that. It wasn't any of the folks in Iraq. We all know that.
Well, I don't know. You may think so.
Just a second, folks. We all sing together. Let's talk one by one.
Well, you may think that the war on terror is only about one individual person, but I think the president has a broader view that that terrorism is more widespread. It's been around for quite a while, and it's going to take a while to get rid of it.
Okay, my friend over here, Eric.
Nick. All day.
I do that all the time.
The question is whether or not what we're doing to fight the war on terrorism and what we're doing in Iraq is actually effective and an appropriate use of our American blood. I'm not sure that what the president is doing is having the effect that the president claims that he'd like to have. And I can understand Pat's frustration in not wanting to have her son become another casualty.
Right. Donald in D.C., good morning.
Morning. How's everybody?
Fine. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just had a question about the president and when he was with the Texas Rangers and all the problems about the drug use. And he seems to forget that ever happened. And, you know, all the guys that were named in that are coming to light. And I think that's the same thing that's going on with the war. I mean, I don't see how American people are so blind to the fact that kids are losing their lives for no reason. I mean, when it first took off, it was like Bin Laden. And I haven't heard Bin Laden yet. And, you know, it's just crazy. I mean.
Okay, I'll tell you what. Donald, hold on the line. Let me get Dwight down in Leesburg to get on the line with us. Good morning, Dwight.
Yes, sir. Good morning. I'm going to identify myself as a Republican, but I fully agree with the lady from, I guess, three callers ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I honestly think if you don't have, you know, a son or daughter fighting over there, it's kind of, or you're not going over there yourself to be a sitting duck, then it's kind of hollow to talk adamantly about how this effort is going to be successful. I know, you know, when you talk about it, it seems noble, but however, the Iraqis don't seem to want freedom as much as, you know, our own people wanted freedom several hundred years ago, because they're certainly not fighting as adamantly for themselves or training as effectively, as we did for our own freedom.
Right.
I think there's a lot of other things going on,
right,
too. It troubles me when you look at 15 out of the 19 hijackers came out of Saudi Arabia. The money to fund extremists is coming out of Saudi Arabia. And yet, you know, the only terrorists that Saudi Arabia is doing anything to are terrorists against their own people, the royal family. Nothing against terrorism against the West.
Okay, Dwight, hold your point, Dwight. Don't leave me, okay? Let me get Bob in D.C. on the line with you. Good morning, Bob. Dwight is on the line from Leesburg. Go ahead.
Hi, Dan. I'm sort of agreeing with Dwight, and I say this to people like Jim Parmalee, is why don't you put your body where your mouth is? Instead of being behind the troops, why don't you get in front of the troops? Pat just mentioned how her son is going on a second tour. If America is behind this war, so to speak, then why aren't people lining up to go over there? You know, the war against Iraq is different from the war on terrorism, and Bush needs to stop making that connection, especially since he doesn't seem to be making his children go over there to fight that war.
Okay, thank you very much, gentlemen. Dwight and Bob, let's go to Emily.
Well, and I think the point here is the question is not whether to fight terrorism or not to fight terrorism. It's about effective strategy. Like Nick was saying, you know, we talk about the effectiveness of the UN, the effectiveness of government. We need an effective strategy to make this actually work.
I would another poll of interest is the fact that now a majority of Americans, over 50% of Americans, not only think that the war in Iraq is wrong, but they think that the president misled the American people into going to that war in the first place by trying to make a false connection between the war on terrorism and the invasion of
Iraq. Jim Parmalee.
Well, those poll numbers go back and forth, and we don't fight wars based on polls, no matter how much you guys might want to, over across the table from me. But as to these you know, callers that keep calling in and saying that, you know, people don't have a right to speak out for or against the war. Being in a democracy, we certainly do. And as long as there are people who are, you know, saying that we should, you know, cut and run, I'm going to stand here and say that we should fight the war on terror and try to win it and defeat terrorism.
I need to echo one of the points one of the callers made about Saudi Arabia. The reason, the root cause of terrorism happens to do with the Wahhabi sect of Islam and the Salafist movement behind it. And that is actually supported by the government of Saudi Arabia and disseminated through the world. So we really need to look at what is inspiring these people to take these extremist acts and start fighting that as a root cause, rather than fighting the extremists on the ground.
Maybe because they just don't agree with us. And number two, number two, maybe it's also because they define their type of freedom differently than what we see as freedom in the West. Has anybody ever thought
My point
about
is there's a minority sect of Islam that is outside of the mainstream that is being promulgated by the Saudi government, and that sect of Islam is the one that talks about jihad against the West.
Okay, let's talk to Steve in Langley Park. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. How are you doing? First of all, I'd just like to say I hear a lot of people criticizing the president and saying what he's doing wrong, but I would like to hear some of his critics suggest what they would do to fight terrorism. I don't never hear anyone suggesting an alternative. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Steve. Fair enough.
Well, I think I would
what
say,
should we do?
I say for one thing, in terms of the comments by Pat from Alexandria that I identify with completely, except for what she said about the United Nations. Now, the United Nations may be in a very bad place right now or not as effective as it should be, but, you know, if it fails, then... Where are we? We have to have some kind of an institute, multilateral institution. We live in a real world here where we've got to figure out ways that we can work together to try to create a peace and prosperity globally. So if it's not going to be the UN, then what is it going to be? United States unilaterally? That will never work.
Well, we might have to build a new one like we did with the League of Nations after
right.
it failed.
Who's
we in that case? We can't do it alone.
One question here. I got really rushed this through. Got to answer Steve's question. What would you suggest in fighting terrorism?
Well, I think one of the things that we've been getting at in the last couple minutes is Saudi Arabia. You know, as Nick mentioned, they are one of the root sources of funding and education.
Okay,
and,
all right, I got to.
Excuse me, Jim. And providing resources for the terrorists, and yet we are told again and again and again that Saudi Arabia is our friend. We provide them foreign aid support. And yet, you know, where are we? Nowhere near Saudi Arabia.
You keep getting confused on this issue. The terrorists want to overthrow Saudi Arabia, so they are in the same
no,
boat.
No, the royal family funds their madrasas and their education schools that is the cradle of this source of terrorism.
The Saudis have been struck by terrorism, and they are with us trying
Robin
to fight
this. Robin Centerville, please help me out. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you? Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Just a couple of points I want to touch on. It's
very quickly,
to keep
Rob.
Up. Yes. The UN... It is a joke. That's why we want to control our own troops, and we don't want the UN controlling it because then we'd be in much more of a quagmire than we already are. I'm a Republican. Do I think we should have gone to war in Iraq? Probably not the greatest thing, but we're there. Let's do it right. Let's offer up some suggestions. Liberals tend to just say, you've done it wrong, you've done it wrong, you've done it wrong. They offer nothing. Let's talk about the troops for a second. These men and women go over there. Yes, they're going over there and putting their lives on the line. Do I think the president's saying, hey, how many troops can I get killed today? No, but let's look at how many of these troops signed up after 9/11 knowing full well that they were going to go into battle. It's not the greatest situation. But when all people do is criticize, it doesn't make it any better. Offer suggestions like the one caller said. Come up with a plan. Democrats would have you believe that the best thing we could do right now is just leave. And if you leave right now, then that's going to make things that much worse. It will not make things any better.
Okay.
So that's all I got to say. I'm going to let you all talk, but I just wanted to get that out there. Thank you very
much. Thanks, Rob. I appreciate it. Appreciate your input. Hey, guys, we got a few minutes left, and I got to ask you about Robin Novak and CNN. I mean, I'll shut up.
He seems a little stressed.
I just want to ask you guys. I'm not going to comment on Robin Novak because, you know, maybe I'll get up and walk out the studio, but no.
He seemed a little stressed out by Jim Carville. I think that maybe he needs to just cool off and relax for a little bit.
Isn't that
CNN's going to let him do?
But isn't that the kind of program where, I mean, you might get, sometimes on this show or on any show, you might get a little edged by somebody that steps on your toe. But
Robert Novak has had a free ride from CNN and the media generally for the last couple of years since this whole situation first broke. And he was the guy that, in his column, that indicated that
Karl Rove thing.
Yeah, exactly. Now, you know, you got a journalist in jail, and you got another one under indictment, but Robert Novak is a journalist, and he actually printed the name in his column, and he has never been called into question about this. Now, at this point, they indicated to him that they were going to call him into question about it after the long last, and what's his reaction? Walk off the set before he has to answer any questions.
Emily? Thank you very much.
She stormed out.
Jim Omley.
Look, you know, these talk shows can get heated, and you know, he apologized for it, and I think we should give him a break.
Is that Lauren? Oh, Adrian in D.C., you got 30 seconds. Good morning.
Hey, how you doing? The only thing that frustrates me about Bush is the whole situation. When the thing went down with Bin Laden and 9/11, he's supposed to be looking for Bin Laden, and all of a sudden the whole thing switched and went to Iraq, and he's fixated with Saddam Hussein. And I don't even know how it switched to that. I mean, if we were going to go to war, why didn't we just go to war with Bin Laden? How do we end up going to war with Iraq and Saddam Hussein?
I know, it's very confusing. It's called Corporate America Making Money, maybe. Thank you very much, sir. No, you can't, because I got to go. I'm sorry.
I just wanted to agree with the caller.
I don't want anybody accusing me of cutting you off. The time shows us that we got to get out of here.
All right.
Getting started.
But that's my that's what they said.
Another hour, Jerry.
That's what they said about Iraq. And look what was going on. Nicholas Solwalk, Libertarian, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Nick Benton, thank you very much, Democrat. Emily Leffler, Independent, thank you very much. And the one and only Jim Pomeroy, my favorite buddy, Republican.
I need another hour for the show.
I know.
To rebut some of these things.
Another hour of you is enough with Bush. And with that, I don't know where the Democrats are, because I think they are out hiding. Thank you very much for everybody who joined in and joined us on this whole discussion. Steve Solomon is our technical producer. Thanking those who helped to put it together. Carolina Restrepo, our research and administrator. And Shaheen, public affairs associate. He's drinking coffee. Jill Sankin is our public affairs journalism intern from GW University. Metro Talk is a WBIG 100.3 and a WTEM Sports Talk 980 public affairs presentation from Clear Channel Radio in Washington, D.C. My friend, enjoy the good weather. Get out, enjoy life. Say hello to your friend. Until next time, much peace, much love. WBIG-FM, Washington.